Welcome to the Paleo View. I'm Stacey Toth of PaleoParents.com. You might know me as one of the co-authors to Eat Like a Dinosaur, Beyond Bacon, or the upcoming Real Life Paleo books. But what you'll find out on this show is that I really like to talk about tangents and soapboxes, and definitely about lifting heavy things.
And I'm Dr. Sarah Ballantyne of ThePaleoMom.com. I'm the author of two books, The Paleo Approach and the upcoming companion guide, The Paleo Approach Cookbook. I'm a huge nutrient density geek, and I just can't help talking about science.
News and Views, where Sarah and I catch up, and you get to listen to our gossip. Me. Do you miss my face?
I do miss you. I miss hugs and pats on the bum.
I do that.
You do pats on the bum.
I'm a creeper.
I assume it's because you know me. Do you do that to strangers?
I don't think so. I think it depends on the bum.
So that would be a yes, you do that to strangers.
I know I do it to my husband all the time, and there have been a few instances where I thought a bum was my husband's, and it wasn't.
I was at your house for one of those.
Yeah, that was pretty awkward.
Well, I mistook a random stranger for Kendall Kendrick at the conference.
Yes, I was there for that.
And I gave her this, like, giant, like aggressive hug from behind. And she turned around and was like, okay, you're a stranger, and I just molested you. Turns out she was a fan, so it could have been worse.
Well, my favorite was that she was pretty funny about it. Because I was kind of standing there, and I didn't witness the event, but I was right next to it, and she looked at me, and she was like, yeah, so I didn't know Sarah before, but we know each other now.
Yeah, she was like, Sarah's going to remember who I am now. I was like, oh, yeah. Oh, embarrassing. So how was your, I saw you just a week ago. But then you went on, like, spring break. How was your spring break?
My spring break was wonderful. I'm not going to lie.
Lie about that.
I know. I really, really, really needed that time to just completely unplug. And I didn't just unplug from the things that, like, I wanted to unplug from. I actually didn't train either. Like, I told myself I really needed to just reconnect with the family. Like, I had felt very disconnected from the family between all the things that we have and the competing priorities. And I'm always feeling like no matter how much time I devote to things in my life, there's never enough time, which I'm sure we can all identify with. But it had gotten really out of control, and I just had this feeling of being overwhelmed with not being able to make anyone happy because I had been spread so thin.
Yeah.
And
believe me, I understand that.
Yeah. And I knew I've been there before. And in previous instances, I've been like, well, I just need to buckle down and do all these things. And that's how I end up with an autoimmune flare and adrenal fatigue. So instead of doing that, it was really hard for me. There's a local strongman competition. There's two local strongman gyms, and there is another strongman competition at the beginning of May, and all the people that I trained with, my friends in the community, are competing and all really wanted me to compete, and I had to say no. And, you know, at first that was really hard for me, but then as time went on, I've been more and more comfortable and confident with that decision, knowing that, you know, my priority right now is finishing the book, and that there's no way that I can possibly give the best of myself to this other community that I support, the paleo community, if I'm focused on training, because when you prep for a competition, like, you train every single day for 3 hours a day, and I have a full-time job and I have a family, so there's really no time to do anything else. So the first thing that I did for me was decide not to do that strongman competition, which allowed me to then say, okay, I have this opportunity. I'm not going to work for basically a week and a half, you know, with weekends on either end. So it felt like 2 weeks. I was like, I'm not going to be at work for 2 weeks. I really want to take this opportunity to reconnect with the family and calm my life down, calm myself down, completely ignore all of the things that I have going on and the deadlines that are going to be late and all of the things in my to-do list that overwhelm me and stress me out. I'm just going to literally tell myself the world is not going to end if I don't do those things. Like, a week and a half is not going to make a difference in any of that. I mean, maybe it might make a difference, but it's not going to be the end of anything. And so I literally just ignored my email and told my team, like, I'm unplugging, and, you know, Matt and I can pretty much do really minimal QA input kind of stuff, but we're not going to be really engaged with the Paleo Parents stuff for a week and a half. And we went to Texas. We awesome time, as you know, just hanging out with friends and enjoying the city. Again, I didn't sign myself up for any of the, like, formal events at Paleo FX, so I had a really wonderful time kind of exploring the city, hanging out with friends, eating where we wanted to eat, doing what we wanted to do, which, whenever we've gone to that conference before, we've always kind of overbooked ourselves and never gotten to do that. Matt got to see Captain America at the Alamo in Austin, Texas, which was super exciting for him. And he went with Russ from The Domestic Man, while I did probably some sort of girly thing with someone else.
I think that was when you were doing your squat.
Oh, totally. And you're right. It was. Yeah. I was doing squats and deadlifts for women with Eva T, which was awesome. But it was interesting because at training tonight, my coach was like, I don't care what you learned in that class. You're not going to do that here. It's like, alrighty then.
Well, I guess we have one opinion on technique.
Yeah. So then when we got back from Paleo FX, we went to a cabin in the woods, what we call it. And
is it not woods?
Well, okay, so it's...
Is it not a cabin?
It's not a cabin, and it's not the woods. Okay. There's some trees around, and it's basically like what a lake house would be. Like, it's on the Potomac River in a state park. And normally state park cabins are just like, you know, a shelter, and maybe there's an electricity opportunity, but you have to bring your own fan or whatever, you know. But these are like fully functional houses. There's 4 bedrooms, 2 bathrooms, a kitchen, and the one that we got had a hot tub. And we go there every year. We usually go twice a year. We go once in the summer and don't get the one with the hot tub, which has more space, so we bring more people. And then we go once over spring break with the hot tub one, because it's usually cold here at spring break. And it was unusually cold, so that was perfect for the hot tub. And we had a really great time just connecting with friends and, you know, not having the TV on, not having the computer on. We played so many games and we had so much fun. And even though it was raining, we took a hike and, you know, we just connected as a family. And I know that sounds probably ridiculous. Like, well, I mean, you're just doing like family things, but you have to understand, like, when Matt and I are working a lot and writing a book and training for Strongman and doing all the things that we've been doing lately, you know, there hasn't been an opportunity for that. And those are the things that we really, really love and care about. So it was important for us to do that stuff. And it really made us have this, like, realization that our life had gone a direction that we didn't really intend and we didn't really want. And I don't know if you read the blog posts from earlier this week, but, you know, we purposely decided, like, 2 years ago that paleo wasn't going to be anything more than a hobby for us, that we were intentionally choosing to not have the blog become something that would be kind of a career. And of course, there's monetary things associated with writing a book and running a blog that people come visit to. But it was always our intention that that money just be kind of put away for the kids' college if it made anything, and that we didn't want our finances to be dependent on it. And over, you know, the course of 2 years of writing multiple books and kind of getting swept up in what all of our friends are doing and all the business things that they're doing, because most of them, it is their job. Most of them, they care about it, of course, they're very passionate about it, but they do things with the consideration that it is their job. And paleo is not Matt and I's job. And we just kind of realized over the break that it had become something that we never really intended, and that there were things about it that we wanted to change. And so we've been really excited to just kind of rebirth our approach to the blog a little bit over spring break. And we've been sharing more of the things that we really love and care about, which is, you know, kind of our day in the life kind of things, and sharing what we do and how we approach it. And the feedback from people has been really amazing in terms of, you know, their enjoyment on those blog posts. And it's been helpful for them to see, like, you know, what we choose to do that's clean paleo, and then what we choose to do. Like for Easter, we got things from a gluten-free bakery because we were on a vacation and didn't feel like cooking all day. And I think, you know, also sharing kind of, hey, this is what we did on spring break, and these are the foods that we ate while we were at the cabin, and, you know, we're just a normal family living this life, and we're just trying to show people it can be done. That's, you know, kind of why we named our book Real Life Paleo. A couple of months ago, we asked people to tell us what words would you use to describe us, and almost everybody said the word real. And I don't want to lose that. I want to be a real family, and I want to share how we're living our real life. And if we get caught up in making paleo a business and that sort of thing, then I think we lose that, and we don't want to lose that. We're not interested in maximizing the money that the blog can make. And there's nothing wrong with anybody that does that. It's just not what we want to do. And I think, you know, because I'm a businesswoman and I'm competitive and everybody loves money, we were doing that for a while. And it's been really nice to kind of have that time to reflect and realize that, you know, what's really important to us is a little bit different than where the blog was going. And it was a good opportunity for us to have that, you know, week and a half to pull it back and restructure and talk to the team about approaching it a little bit differently and how we want to prioritize. And I'm sure it'll be a learning curve that'll evolve, you know, weeks, months, or whatever the case may be. We're still writing a book. We're still going to launch a book. We're still doing those things because we want to, and we're really excited about what we feel like we can offer the community. But we're just going to do things with a little bit of a different mindset, like, let's do this because we want to, rather than we need to in order to generate revenue on the block. So, yeah, that was a really long answer to a simple question.
No, but it's, like, awesome. No, I saw that you, like, I think it was on Instagram, hey, go check out the blog post about, you know, how we're changing our, you know, approach. And I was like, oh, I should read that. And then I never got a chance to.
It's okay.
I got part of my book back today from Edit. And this is really interesting to me because I turned it in a week and a half ago. And it's really showing to me one of the big lessons that we learned from doing the paleo approach is that I write epic books, and we have to change how we divide the, I guess, how we divide the tasks. So one of the things that we learned was we can't just have like one editor sit and edit the whole book and then give it back to me and then have me go through all of the edits, because it has me doing nothing for, I mean, it took like 3 months to edit the paleo approach for the editor to go through that first round of edits. And then it took me 3 weeks, but working like 11 and 12 hour days to go through all of those edits. And so what we've learned now is I have two editors doing different portions of the book, and they're both giving me this week sort of what they've done so far so that I can start going through their edits while they're still doing the first round of edits on the rest of the book. So it's cool because it's much less pressure, and it's not I mean, it's doing exactly what we needed to do. And I wish we had done with the first book, which is sort of divided up. So I don't have this like long sort of idle time with the book. And then this like really, really intense, now I have this job that needs to be done now. But at the same time, I was really enjoying the idle time and the break that I had last week. And I wasn't quite ready to get the book back in my hands, or at least part of it. So, because I also took most of last week off in terms of, you know, I really didn't, I took some photos for the book, but it was just because I happened, there was a few photos I needed still to retake, and I just happened to be cooking food, so I just cooked that food and took some pictures. And I did some pretty minimal amount of, I mean, I just let my email kind of pile up, and I just did like the very minimal amount that I could sort of get away with doing, and I really just enjoyed my mom's visit. My mom was here until last night, and because she watched the kids. My husband was at a conference that overlapped with PaleoFX, so my mom flew down to watch the kids while we were both traveling. And then, you know, it was not our spring break. The kids were in school, which meant that I got to hang out with my mom, which I don't think we've done in a long time. Like, just really been able to hang out like that. Like, probably since before kids. And it was really, really fun. So now I'm feeling like, oh, I'm not ready to go back to work.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
But
I will tell you, I went back to my regular job today and to our routine today. And the beginning, I was teasing Matt. I'm like, I don't even know if I'll remember how to get there. And, you know, I called him at around 11 o'clock and I was like, I miss you. Because we've been spending every single moment of the last almost 2 weeks together. And it might surprise people to know I actually really like my husband.
It doesn't surprise me at all. He's very likable.
I love that man. I like to squeeze his tush. So
we established.
Right. And I really like him. So honestly, the hardest part was not being with him. And so I called him at 11 and I was like, you know, I miss you. And then he was like, I miss you too. It feels so weird you're not here. And we were like, okay, I'll see you later tonight. And then I was able to just kind of focus, and I was super stoked to be eating clean again. Like, one of the things that I told myself I was on vacation was from, because I mentioned on the podcast before that while I was training for Strongman, I was eating super, super clean because it really affects my performance. And so I went off of the super clean plan a little bit. Sarah and I have talked before, we're not paleo perfectionists, but I'm also celiac, so of course there's like never gluten, and there was a lot more sugar than there usually is. But so I got back to my regular kind of soup, salad, seafood, you know, healthy carb kind of structure, and went back to the gym today. And I know, Sarah, that it's painful to get back to, you know, writing and editing and your mom leaving and all that kind of stuff, but I can honestly say that I'm totally jazzed about being back to my regular routine. I'm one of those people that really likes, like, a schedule and a routine, and I also really like adventure and just kind of jetting off sometimes, but the structure of knowing kind of what the plan is helps me stick to things, so was super stoked. And then I totally rocked the gym tonight. I posted two videos on Instagram that everyone needs to check out. I mean, I'm sure by the time this airs, there'll be way more me lifting heavy things on Instagram, because now that I'm back in the gym, I love to share that stuff. But today I PR'd my deadlift, and then we did H-stone carry. Do you know what H-stone carry is, Sarah?
H-stone?
It's Husafel stone is what it stands for.
Is it a stone in the shape of a giant H?
Well, it's in the shape of a coffin. It's, what do they call that? Like a rhombus? I don't know what the shape is, but it's like a coffin. And, you know, they call it like the tombstone or the H-stone. And this one in particular is made out of really uncomfortable concrete, like not smooth concrete, like the kind with rough rocks thrown in, and there's blood all over it from people using it. It's really gross. But I've never been able to use that H-stone before, and I totally rocked it tonight. I was like rocking it really hard, and the whole gym was cheering for me, and it was really, really nice, because that was one of my goals, was to be able to lift the H-stone, and the H-stone that we used to have in the gym was 175, I think, and this one was 200, and I did like 2.5 laps with it, so that's super exciting, and so I'm like, you know, pumped. My endorphins are going, and I'm like, yes, I love this stuff. Like, of course I love spring break and spending time with the boys, and that was really great to reconnect, and now I feel like I know it's important to me. I've gotten clarity, and I'm ready to get back to the schedule of doing the things that matter, and that means lifting heavy things and eating clean.
It's awesome. I'm like, want to watch those Instagram videos right now. It would be kind of distracting in terms of actually like doing a podcast.
Yeah, probably.
Should we talk about omega-3s?
So let's talk about the fact that we haven't had like a show in how long?
Months? I think there was like one or two that snuck in there at some point. Yeah, it's been a long time since it's been just the two of us, and we've actually done like our usual news and views, Science with Sarah question and answer structure. People are probably like, people who just recently found us are probably like, what? You normally have structure?
I thought it was hysterical because I actually listened to last week's show because I was just kind of curious how it came back together. And I didn't realize that Matt left in a line that Diane Sanfilippo had said to us because she like came in to deliver barbecue, which, by the way, that's like the coolest thing ever for a podcast is having Diane Sanfilippo come in to deliver barbecue in the middle of recording. And we made a joke about that being awesome, and she's like, well, your podcast is usually so much more produced than ours. And then I started thinking about it, and I was like, not really, not lately. So, yes, our show usually is.
Back on that show, like the PaleoFX show, we got some like amazing comments on that show.
Yeah, I heard that was like people's favorite show for a long time. I think you know, that was definitely hanging out with us. Like, literally, we turned on a voice recorder and just hung out with our friends.
That's right. Maybe we should do that more often. Only problem is we live, you know, I don't know, how many states are between us?
I don't know that that's so much a problem. It's just a reason to justify hanging out more.
Clearly. AHS. PaleoFX is adding another conference in October?
Yeah, I'm not sure if we're going to be able to make that. I really want to, but I know that we're going to be touring with the book in November, and that's the end. That's the busy time of the year for me. I revealed that I'm in a field that is affected by the government fiscal year last year. That's why I'm always super busy in kind of end of July, September, and October for my job. So, August. I just like to pretend that doesn't exist.
Pretend August doesn't exist, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually the worst month. But then, because also I am thinking about maybe joining you guys for the Vancouver-Seattle book signings in July.
Whee!
So I just have to figure out, like, what are the things that I can do and what are the things that I can't? Because as I just talked about, I've been focusing on not overextending myself. And Matt and I have always wanted to go to Colorado. So it would be an awesome opportunity. I just need to figure out, like, what are the things that we're doing in order, can we make that happen? So,
yeah, I mean, I haven't yet compared schedules with my husband's schedule or, you know, figured out how possible it is, but I had a lot of fun at PaleoFX. Like, it was my first time going to PaleoFX, and it was just such a dynamic group of people. And I think what was really cool to me about that was meeting people from so many different walks of life who were coming together with this like common passion. And it just for me really emphasized how cohesive and awesome, to use a word that I like to use frequently, the whole paleo movement is, because it felt like being home. Like, as much as I was away from home and like missing my husband and missing the kids, at the same time, it felt like just being surrounded by family. It was a really, really neat experience for me.
Yeah, that's why we love PaleoFX. It's like, we have all these really close friends that we never get to see, and it's a really great opportunity to do it, especially Austin's a wonderful, beautiful city with great paleo resources and food, and I've heard the same thing about...
Yeah, I've heard Denver is very similar in that, yeah, in that regard.
And I've always wanted to meet Alana, and she's out there, so it just... I'm hoping that we can make it work, but...
I'll keep my fingers crossed.
Cool.
For, like, the next 5 months. I might uncross them from time to time.
Occasionally.
You know, to chop veggies, you know, those kinds of things.
Cool. So, the whole point of that additional 3-minute tangent was to say that we actually have a topic and questions and science with you today, right?
We do. We're going to talk about omega-3s.
Ooh, ooh. I love them. They're good.
That's it. Show's over. That's all you need to know. Take home message. They're good.
Cool.
Let's do a Science with Sarah.
Love it.
Next segment is Science with Sarah, where I take a moment to explain the details and the whys. So one of the sort of overarching principles behind a paleo diet is this whole idea of balancing omega-3s and omega-6s. And I think a lot of people are very familiar with, at least, especially the term omega-3s, because it's added to so much marketing, right? You see, you know, flax oil high in omega-3s, omega-3 eggs, and there's now like omega-3 milk. And then people are starting to see, you know, perfect balance of omega-3s to omega-6s, or they're starting to see labels that say DHA and EPA. And so those terms are starting to get more into just sort of the more public lexicon. But at the same time, as people are more familiar with those terms, I think there's still, you know, a fairly frequent disconnect between the terminology and understanding that those things are good and what an omega-3 fatty acid really is. And I especially wanted to kind of go through, you know, what makes a fat an omega-3 fatty acid, because I want to delineate basically three different omega-3 fatty acids, and especially ALA or alpha-linoleic acid from the other two that we hear about a lot, DHA or docosahexaenoic acid, don't make me say that again, or EPA or eicosapentaenoic acid. That's also the last time I'm going to say that.
You're going to have to say them again.
I'm going to have to say them again? All right, Matt didn't get it. I have to say it again. I'm just going to stick with EPA and DHA rather than the long molecular formula name. But basically there's these, you know, three main types of omega-3 fatty acids. Before I talk more about what makes them different from each other, I want to talk about what a fatty acid is. So what a fatty acid is it's the basic building block of a fat. So a fat is a larger molecule, and it's made up of fatty acids that are linked together. Fatty acids are actually really simple chemical structures. They are a hydrocarbon chain. That just basically means they're carbon atoms that are strung together, that are, you know, bonded together in a chain. And wherever there's an extra electron, that electron is bonded to a hydrogen atom. So you see these pictures that have a bunch of C's with lines in between them, and they have H's all over the place. And it's basically, you know, carbon atoms bound together, hydrogens saturate the carbon chain. That's where the term saturated fatty acid comes from. And at one end of the chain, there's something called a carboxyl group, which is a carbon atom that's bound to one oxygen atom and one hydroxide molecule. So that's an oxygen and a hydrogen. And that's actually what makes it an acid. So an acid has the, you know, this carboxyl group at the end. So it's really a very, very simple molecular formula. It's a bunch of carbons, two oxygens, and a bunch of hydrogens. Now, what makes a monounsaturated fat versus a polyunsaturated fat versus a saturated fat is the type of bonds between those carbon atoms. So in a saturated fat, all of the bonds are single bonds. That means those carbon atoms that are adjacent to each other are each sharing one electron with each other. And then they've got three other electrons to share. So they're sharing their three other electrons with three separate hydrogen atoms. If there's a double bond, those two carbon atoms are each sharing two electrons. They only have two other free electrons each to share with two hydrogen atoms each. This is one of those times where a video podcast and a whiteboard would be really, really cool. Because it would be just so much easier for me to just draw it for people. So a omega-3 fatty acid is a type of polyunsaturated fat. That basically means that there are at least two places along that hydrocarbon chain where the bonds between carbon atoms are double bonds. And that actually means there's not as many hydrogens in that molecule as there would be if all of the bonds were single bonds. What makes it an omega-3 fat is just the position of the first double bond. So when the first double bond is between the third and fourth carbon atom, that makes it an omega-3 fatty acid. Omega-6s, just as a fairly relevant aside, the first double bond is between the sixth and seventh carbon atoms. And then there's some other double bonds in there. Now, all of the omega-3s are actually long and very, very long chain fatty acids. So you also hear the term like short chain, medium chain, long chain. That just is like how many carbons are in that hydrocarbon chain. So if it's, you know, six or less, that's short chain. Those are some of the like really cool fatty acids that are made by our bacteria in our digestive tracts. Medium chain, right? You've heard the term medium chain triglycerides, that great healthy saturated fat in coconut oil. That's, you know, a chain that's between 6 and 12 carbons long. Long chains is sort of the 13 to 21 range, and very long chain is anywhere over 22. So basically what's different between these three omega-3 fats, ALA, DHA, and EPA, is how long that carbon chain is. ALA is 18 carbons long, EPA is 20 carbons long, and DHA is 22 carbons long. ALA happens to have three double bonds between carbon atoms. EPA happens to have five double bonds between carbon atoms, which, you know, every double bond kind of puts a kink into the molecular structure, and that changes how it interacts chemically with other things. DHA happens to have six double bonds. The body really only uses EPA and DHA. So these fatty acids are actually embedded into the outer cell membrane of every cell in the body, and they're kind of stored there. So along with arachidonic acid, which is the essential omega-6 fatty acid, that's also embedded in the and stored in the cell membrane, those fatty acids are used for chemical reactions within the cell that actually produce signaling molecules. And they actually produce signaling molecules that control inflammation, among other things like blood pressure, pain signaling. And so that's why we're trying to balance omega-3s and omega-6s, is because of the signaling molecules that they are metabolized into inside the cell. So they're stored in the cell. They compete for these chemical reactions. And then depending on which one is used as the basis for this chemical reaction will determine which signaling molecule is made, which determines what type of signal is being sent throughout the body. So that's why omega-3s are really, really important. But I think what's really important to understand is that ALA, which is the plant form of omega-3 fatty acids, is not the fatty acid that's used by the human cells. What is used for these chemical reactions is EPA and DHA. And it's also really important to understand that, you know, ALA is sort of, it's considered the essential omega-3 fatty acid. And it's given this label because it's the shortest omega-3 fatty acid. But it's actually not the one that's essential for life. EPA and DHA are the ones that are actually essential for life. And the body can technically convert ALA into EPA and DHA, but this conversion is incredibly inefficient. So maybe something like 3% in really, really healthy people, and maybe something like 0.5% in people who are dealing with inflammation and other chronic illness. And so, you know, I think we've all had this point in our, well, I certainly had this point in my life where I was supplementing with flax oil, which is like horrifically disgusting flavor-wise. Maybe other people like the flavor, but I thought it was vile.
What was?
A flax oil. Oh, have you ever just taken a swig of flax oil?
Why would you do that?
Well, I was doing it for the omega-3 fats. And I think people are buying flax oil in capsules or hemp seed or chia seed. And the idea being that they're going to get all their essential omega-3s. And yet, that's not the type of omega-3 fatty acid that the body actually needs. And there are a couple of studies now that are showing that there may be some health benefits to increasing ALA intake. And it's really not understood where that health benefit comes from, if there is some sort of more minor role for ALA in the human body that has yet to be described, or if it really all comes from, like, if you completely saturate the body with ALA, you might somehow manage to boost the conversion to DHA and EPA. But what we really understand is exactly how EPA and DHA have all these beneficial properties, and that those are the fatty acids that we really need. Those are the omega-3 fatty acids that come from animal sources. So they're the ones in fish and shellfish. They're the ones in grass-fed meats and wild meats. And those are the ones in eggs from chickens that are fed, you know, like flaxseed, or that chickens that are eating a lot of grass and bugs, their eggs have a lot of omega-3 fatty acids. And it's in part because we're using their livers to do the conversion to the longer chain omega-3 fats for us. So this is my, like, if you're eating flax or hemp or chia for the omega-3s, stop. If you're eating it for the flavor and you really like taking swigs of flax oil, that's a different thing. We can maybe talk about how flax is really high in phytoestrogens, and that maybe is not the greatest thing for most people. But if you're, you know, doing it as a, because this is good for me, there's really no compelling reason to eat those foods. I think that was everything I wanted to say about omega-3 fats. I could talk about this like endlessly because it's been such a personal journey for me with omega-3 fats.
What would be your top 3 to 5 recommended foods to get omega-3? I mean, I know you listed some, but if people were in a vacuum and they were like, oh my gosh, I'm so overwhelmed, I don't even know, like, it's not going to be chia seeds, right? So
no.
What are your top 3 to 5?
The number one source of especially DHA, so that's the longest chain omega-3 fat, and it's the one that seems to have the most anti-inflammatory properties. The richest food source of that is salmon. And even farmed salmon, it's not as good as wild salmon in terms of its DHA content, but it still has a lot. Canned salmon still has a lot. I mean, so I would say salmon would be the number one go-to food, but any oily fish, trout or mackerel or sardines, I know you love those. Any
You're listing that, way more than 3 to 5.
Right. Okay. Well, I'm considering this one.
You can't. You're confusing people.
Fatty fish. Can I say fatty fish?
All right. And you're recommending the number one fatty fish is salmon.
Yes. Other great sources of omega-3 fats, if people are into organ meat, brain is one of the highest food sources of long-chain omega-3 fatty acids. So if they can get brain scrambled up with eggs. Have you ever had scrambled brain?
I have not had scrambled brain. I have made head cheese and eaten head cheese several times. That's the most amount of brain I've ever had.
It's very high in omega-3s. And then any grass-fed meat has a pretty good amount of omega-3s, especially in proportion to omega-6s. And then there's one more food that I actually probably should have mentioned earlier, so thanks for asking this question, which is sea vegetables. So as much as I said that ALA was the plant form of omega-3s and DHA and EPA were the animal forms of omega-3s, sea vegetables like seaweed are actually the exception, and sea vegetables actually contain DHA, omega-3 fatty acids. And that actually might be one of the reasons why seafood is so particularly rich in omega-3 fats, because plankton and seaweed is the bottom of the food chain, and so it's magnified as the fish eats the plants, and then that fish eats that fish, and then the even bigger fish eats that fish. That's probably
kind of like the cow eats the grass,
right? But the grass is—it's not. Yes. That's all I got.
Okay, so some of the things that you didn't mention that I think are also maybe a little more accessible for people. Grass-fed ruminant animals are often high in omega-3, correct?
Yeah, they're simultaneously higher in omega-3 than conventional, and lower in omega-6 than conventional meat. So when you start talking about the ratio of omega-3 to omega-6, a grass-fed animal probably has between, it sort of depends on the breed and the type of grass they're eating and what time of year it is, but they'll have between a 1 and 2 ratio of omega-3 to omega-6 to 1 and 4, which is basically considered optimal for the human body, whereas conventional meat, depending again on exactly how they're raised, how much junk they're being fed, is typically anywhere between, it can be as low as 1 in 4, but 1 in 10 is more typical, to anywhere up to like 1 in 25, which is pretty bad for us.
Right. Cool.
Let's do a question. Yeah, let's do a question.
I'll also throw out there, I know I've said it a million bajillion times, and we've talked about it on the Gallbladder Show. So if you haven't listened to that, go back and listen to it. I've been getting a lot of gallbladder questions on the blog lately. So it is a bazillion times easier for my body to handle short and medium chain fats, especially when I'm getting good ratio of omega-3 to omega-6s. Like, I've been focused a lot on eating higher omega-3, adding seafood, and moderating my fat and increasing carbohydrate over the last couple of months, and I haven't really talked about it, but I stopped taking a lot of my gallbladder supplementation, like my ox bile and my HCL. I only take them if I'm eating like a non-balanced meal lately. And I talked to Sarah a couple months ago, my hair was falling out, and I like tweaked some stuff and added in food that was higher for me, and then stopped doing the supplements and working on nutrient density like we always talk about, and it's been working really well for me. So I would highly encourage people, like, I know we have a lot of gallbladder questions and people who listen because they contact me all the time. This is really what I believe an essential part of that healing process is, getting the right fats into your body, because when you don't have that supplemental support to help you break them down and digest them, it's really difficult. So, yeah, I'll just throw that out there.
Cool.
What's a question? Questions and Answers, where we answer questions submitted by you through the contact form on our websites, paleomom.com and paleoparents.com.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
So we have a multi-part question from Caroline from New York City. So we're going to, I think we should maybe go through this piece by piece because there's a lot of pieces. What do you think?
Yeah, you handle that.
All right. Carolyn writes, "Hi there. I'm trying to branch out in my diet and also get more omega-3s. As you may have noticed, canned seafood is usually the least expensive way to go. Last night, I bought a can each of salmon, oysters, clams, and crab. But this morning, I started thinking, aren't omega-3 fatty acids fragile and degrade easily? And how well do they actually last through the canning process? Am I actually getting much benefit from these?" Why don't we stop there and then I'll read the rest of the question after we answer that part.
Okay.
Do you want me to answer?
Yeah. I'm wondering if maybe I missed. I feel like maybe we already answered that. So my simple answer would be yes, you're getting benefit from it.
Yeah. So I think where this confusion comes from is in part the discussion of fish oil versus eating whole fish. And part of this confusion comes from the discussion of, heating oils that are high in polyunsaturated fats and how these oils, when you heat them, oxidize really easily. And then eating that oxidized fat is actually, pro-inflammatory and it actually could cause more problems. And so I think this causes a lot of confusion, not just when you're talking about omega-3 fatty acids, but when you're talking about, say, baking with almond flour or, those types of discussions, because there's this idea that these foods that are really, really high in polyunsaturated fats are, those fats are going to get damaged when you cook them. And, heat is used in the canning process. So the really, really important answer to this question is that polyunsaturated fats, and that's both omega-3s and omega-6s, are far, far, far more stable when they're still in whole food form compared to when they're isolated. And that's because when they're in the whole food, whether that's a piece of fish or an almond, and that doesn't even mean, it has to be a whole almond. It just means that it's not isolated. So it's part of basically a matrix. And it's bound with all kinds of things all around it in this, structure. And that structure actually protects the fatty acids from being oxidized when they're heated. So they're actually far more stable as part of the whole food. And that can mean almond meal in addition to whole almonds, and it can mean the fish after it's being sliced and flaked or whatever it is before it's canned. So actually, as long as you're not isolating the oil and making fish oil or making almond oil or sesame oil, those fats are very, very stable. The whole we've talked about this whole discussion about supplementing with fish oil as opposed to eating whole fish is because fish oil, as soon as you isolate those fatty acids from the whole food, they don't have this matrix to protect them from oxidation anymore. And they oxidize really, really easily. And so fish oil, depending on how it's processed, depending on how it's stored, depending on how long it's stored for, it can be more or less oxidized. And so this is why studies show that it can be really, really beneficial if taken over a short period of time, so 4 to 6 weeks. And that's because it really quickly changes the balance of DHA and EPA versus AA or arachidonic acid in the cell membranes. But then over the long term, it can actually cause problems. And that's because of the sort of chronic consumption of oxidized fats. So that's the long, geeky, sciencey way of saying that canned fish is a great source of omega-3s, and those omega-3s are very protected during the canning process because they're still part of the whole food.
Yeah, you gleaned more from that. Good job. High five.
I like talking about, I don't know, geeky science.
I think we've established that.
More than once.
What's next?
This one you're going to love. Okay, so Carolyn goes on to say, I've bought the skin and bones salmon before and turned it into pate with onion and caper and lemon. Tasty enough, and I feel so proud for finding a way to eat the skin and bones that won't freak me out. But I never feel the same boost as I get from fresh sushi. Maybe that's just because sushi is delicious.
Yes, so it is.
I'm confused and wondering. Yeah, sushi's yummy.
So I'm curious to hear what the science on raw versus, you know, cured, canned, not raw, cooked would be. Because obviously you're changing the molecular structure of food. It's interesting to me, though, that she would not feel a boost from eating skin, bone, whole. I guess if it's canned salmon, it wouldn't be whole canned, so there wouldn't be organs in there. But, like, for a sardine, you're eating the whole thing, so you're getting organs as well. I can't say that I've ever found a way to eat skin and bones other than at a sushi place when we ate fried mackerel. And that was the first time I've ever...
Is it a texture thing that you don't like about
canned
fish?
Yes, for sure, definitely.
Like it's actually the texture that I love about it. Okay, this is one of those embarrassing stories that I probably shouldn't tell, so here I go. My second, like, summer/part-time job that I had in high school was working in the kitchen in an intermediate care hospital, and I was the weekend cook, so it was like soup and sandwiches. And we used to get these like giant cans of salmon. And there was certain, like, there had to make a certain amount of like salmon filling for sandwiches that didn't have the bones. And I actually used to like separate them out and then just eat them plain for my supper because I didn't want to throw them out because they were like my favorite part. That's the whole story. I used to eat a lot of bad things. That was like one of the good things I ate in that place.
Yeah.
So
good for her for eating the pate. If she likes it, awesome. Keep eating it. If sushi makes her feel good, awesome. Keep eating it. There's no reason to not have both of these wonderful things in your life. I don't know what more to add than that.
I really cannot think of a biological reason why she would feel better after eating sushi other than eating or the canned salmon pate other than like a dopamine response because of enjoyment. You know, generally.
Yeah, I can attest to that.
Right. Well, you know, generally when you cook food, maybe, it actually makes the nutrition more bioavailable.
And also I would say, because I personally, if she's eating any sort of rice, like even a couple of pieces as a splurge, like oftentimes paleo people are so low carb that when you eat that carbohydrate, you feel great from it. I mean,
I'm so glad you said that.
A myriad of reasons. Yeah. Like, that could also be why she's feeling good when she eats sushi.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. Okay, let's go on to the last part of her question. She says, also, any suggestions on what the heck to do with my can of clams and can of smoked oysters? I spent an hour Googling paleo recipes, and the only thing I can think of is to sauté a mirepoix, add either coconut cream or butter and hot water, immersion blend the whole mess, and then add the shellfish and cook to warm through. I've never worked with either of those ingredients before, and I'm trying to find something beginner-friendly that won't skeeve me out. Sorry, just the word skeeve. Thanks, ladies. You've been my heroes every other time I've had a question.
Awesome. So I can tell you that we have a recipe on our site that's phenomenal. It's based off of a recipe that Matt's mother served to him growing up, and it is with clanned cams. We make it probably at least once a month, only because the canned clams are kind of hard to find, because we get whole baby clams. And, I mean, you could use chopped, but it's just tastier with whole.
I buy them by the case from Amazon.
Nice. It's Cole's favorite meal. We actually made it for him with Capello's grain-free pasta at the cabin. And it was like, you know, it's... Anyway, that takes it to a whole new level. The recipe on the blog, it's linguine and clam sauce, I think is what it's called. It's made with, I think, either spaghetti noodles, yellow squash noodles, or zucchini noodles. You can do any one if you like them. Or you could, you know, turbocharge it and use Capello's grain-free pasta.
Like the word turbocharge.
Oh my gosh. I mean, it's
hard not to love that. Didn't I see a pasta recipe? Wasn't it a clam sauce that you posted with
Capello's? We've posted it in media before, but like the recipe on the blog is from before Capello's is even out, so it's made with some sort of vegetable noodle. Either way, it's delicious. The sauce is what's amazing, and it's kind of what you described. It's onions, so Ross wouldn't like it.
Ross, if you're listening to the show, don't eat the linguine.
Yeah, so white wine, or if you're not going to use white wine, you could also use apple juice, or at the cabin, we didn't have any white wine, so we used hard cider, which is basically like a cross between apple juice and white wine. And let's see what else is in there. Some parsley, and then that might be it. I mean, it's pretty simple. Either butter or lard. I mean, obviously, you're going to have some sort of fat. I don't think there's any cream in it, though. It's not a creamy sauce. And it's basically like buttery, garlicky, and the clams are wonderful. You don't have to be skeeved out by it. Like, honestly... We talk about a lot of weird things in here, but like they serve linguine with clams at, you know, every Italian restaurant. And it's a pretty, as far as shelled seafood goes, like the texture of a clam, I think is going to be a lot more palatable for you than a mussel or an oyster. That's because mussels are... and oysters are bigger, so there's more to the bite, and you're getting...
It actually completely depends on the variety of clam, the variety of mussel, and the variety of oyster.
Okay, well, what I'm telling you...
small versions of all of those,
if you get versions of all. If you get the canned clams, it's going to be smaller.
Baby clams are very small.
Yes, and the texture is not nearly as much as, like... I mean, when you bite into, because we also make mussels a lot, which they're very affordable and they're super healthful. So whenever we find them at the store, we get them. But that is more of like something that our family eats. And if someone were coming over for dinner, I might not necessarily make that unless I knew that they would eat it. Because mussels has a kind of a bit of a gritty texture, and I'm like using my fingers that in a way that you can't see. I don't know how to describe it other than some people don't find it pleasant. Just like a raw oyster or canned oyster is also larger with a texture that you might not enjoy. So there's all kinds of seafood. Like my dad loves conch. It's like a family favorite. And that's got more of like a texture to clam. It's more chewy. I'm elongating the answer to this, and what I'm telling you to do is make the linguine and clam recipe on our site with the canned whole baby clams, and I believe that you will be satisfied with that, and it won't skeeve you out and make you happy. We also have recipes for mussels on our site, and we'll have mussel recipe in real life paleo, but I think if you're just starting, I would recommend clams over mussels and oysters. I know you eat canned oysters, and I eat oysters as well. I would much prefer them fresh than canned most of the time, just because the canned is smoked and I don't like that smoky flavor, and I like to put just fresh lemon juice on the fresh ones, but that's just my personal preference.
Yeah, I mean, I really like fresh oysters and smoked oysters, so I just eat smoked oysters out of the can. It's one of my like convenience foods. Like, uh-oh, I need to eat lunch now. What can I put in my mouth in 10 seconds? Clams, though, I don't like eating out of the can. I find them really salty, so I actually like to cook those. I have a really epic clam chowder recipe coming in the cookbook. So that's like, three, 4 months away, unfortunately. But yeah, I would definitely, I mean, there's lots of other sort of more traditional clam recipes that can probably be very easily adapted, like cioppino, which is sort of a mixed seafood chowder. It's sort of Italian style chowder. There's paleo friendly recipes of cioppino floating around. And I also think like these are also things that are typically served as hors d'oeuvres on a cracker, really, really classically with, you know, red onion, lemon juice and capers, and maybe a little bit of parsley. And you can actually like make almost like a salad with capers and red onion and lemon juice and lots of chopped parsley. And that actually can really cut through that. I don't even know how to describe the flavor that these sort of bivalve shellfish have that people tend to not like. But that particular flavor combination, the reason why it's paired so frequently with oysters and clams and mussels is because it cuts through that flavor really well. And then you could just serve that on something that's, you know, a paleo-friendly cracker. There's lots of cracker recipes out there. Most of them have nuts, but I have a recipe on my site for plantain crackers that are basically made with green plantains, or you could use something like a store-bought plantain chip or sweet potato chip would sort of serve that sort of crunchy, slightly salty bottom vessel really, really well. I'm trying to think of any other ideas that you didn't already say. That's all I got.
Cool. Well, that was fun.
That was like the omega-3 show.
We like omega-3s.
They're good.
And it's an hour.
Then it's an hour. It's like that comes us right back to our take-home message. Omega-3s are good.
But you could have just skipped the last half hour.
Right. But don't bother getting them from Flax and Chia.
Although, like you said, Flax and Chia can be paleo if they work for you and don't bother you. They're just not where you should be thinking of getting your nutrients. Like, I really like chia seed pudding, but it is a dessert. I do not pretend that I am getting my omega-3s.
You're not saying, oh, I'm getting my omega-3s right now by eating all these chia seeds sweetened with. What do you sweeten with?
Oftentimes, they don't sweeten at all. We just use canned coconut milk, and then, which is like pretty sweet for me. And then I'll put in like a little bit of cocoa powder. And that's it. Sometimes like a tablespoon of honey or maple syrup, but I try to not eat sweet things. So
I do so much better when I don't eat sweet things. I had like 2 days of eating more sweets between, it's my mother's birthday on Saturday. She's here, so we had to do a big thing. We got a cake from our local gluten-free bakery, Gluten-Free Cutie. And then it was Easter, and we didn't have much, but we had some like dark chocolate Easter eggs, but it's not like dark chocolate. Like, if I have a piece of chocolate now, it's like 85 or 90%, and these are probably 70%, I'm sort of guessing, based on how sweet they were. And I didn't even have that much, but I was like, already this morning, I woke up like jonesing for sugar. I'm like, time to quit. It's not cool. You know, life would be so much better if sugar wasn't so addictive.
Ain't that the truth?
So I think that's a show. Do we have any other like announcements or things we should be telling people? Please review us on iTunes.
I think by the time this airs, the Primal Life Kit bundle sale is still going, which Sarah and I both, this is the first time we've ever contributed to an ebook bundle.
Yeah. Me too.
Well, this I said both. So if you haven't yet checked that out, I would highly recommend we each have a link on our blog, and Monica can put links in the show notes, but I won't speak for both of us, but I can honestly say that, you know, we will not continue to contribute to ebook bundles often, because just it's very difficult as an author. We don't get author money from contributing. It's just for the bundles that we personally affect. Like, if you link through our blog, then we get a portion of that sale. But if, you know, somebody else sells the bundle, we as the author of that book don't get any money for that. So we, I, for us, genuinely contributed to this just because I feel like, you know, we have a resource that's out there that I wanted to spread the word about the resource and help people and contribute. We put in an abridged version of Three-Face Paleo. It's about half as long as it usually is. It's 68 pages. So if you've been wanting to check out Three-Face Paleo, you can get, you know, the abridged version in this bundle. And there's also a code for a discount on the purchase price of the whole thing if you did want to get the rest of it. But we felt like it was a really great bundle. We think it's a really, really awesome opportunity for people who are kind of just starting out paleo or who are looking for more information. There's like $1,500 worth of stuff in this bundle.
Yeah, for $39. And it's good stuff. Like, you know, sometimes there's bundles and you're like, well, great, it's $1,500 worth of stuff I would never buy. But this bundle, I mean, I think it's why we're both endorsing it, is like some really great ebooks, some great resources, some great discounts. Like, it's really good value.
Yeah, and there are some like awesome things in there that basically I've already paid for that would have totaled $39. Like the Well Fed 2 book, the gelatin ebook from Caitlin Weeks. You have an ebook in there. I have an ebook in there. There's membership clubs like Liz from previously Cave Girl Eats and now Real Food Liz just is launching a community of, I think it's called Real Food for Bad Cooks or something like that. And it's like a lifetime membership that would normally be $40, and it's included in this bundle. So basically, like, everything else is free if you were planning on joining that lifetime membership right. community. So, I mean, it's totally worth checking out. And you know, we hate to be sales pitchy, but I really do think, like, even if it's not for you, it's a good opportunity for people. Like, I personally have people in my life who are like, oh, Stacey, I'm thinking about going paleo, but it's so overwhelming, and I don't know what to do, and I don't know where to start, and I don't even know what it means. Like, this is the perfect link to send to them. And, like, you cannot claim that you don't have the information if you're willing to spend $39, yeah. 'Cause you get so much for it. And also, the discount codes to vendors often pay for themselves, too. Like, if you're thinking about buying a Squatty Potty, you know, you get the discount code for it, and then there you go. You know, it's like
there's some great discount yeah. codes. And I actually should mention that the ebook that I contributed to this bundle, I am not selling independently. And at this point, do not have any plans to sell it independently. It was kind of a created this ebook, and then I was trying to figure out what I was going to do with it. And it seemed like really the right thing to do to include it in this ebook bundle. So at this point, if people are interested in it, it's a Paleo Approach Quick Start Guide. So it'll be useful for people who are trying to do the autoimmune protocol and you know, don't have my book or don't want to delve into the dense science that's in my book. But it's also sort of a great summary for people who have my book and just want, you know, shopping lists that they can print off and bring with them to the store. This is like an exclusive offer for my Paleo Approach Quick Start Guide.
Sweet. I can't think of any other announcements. You have some book signings. We can put in a link to the events thing.
Oh, yeah. If anybody's listening to this in and lives in the, you know, within driving distance of Reno, I'm going to be in Reno doing a Q&A and a joint signing with Rob Wolf, which basically means...
Who's he?
I'll be fangirling along with, like, everybody else who comes to see, like, him. I'm just assuming people are going to be coming to see him. So come join me to fangirl with Rob Wolf. It'll be super awesome. I'm sure he doesn't listen to our podcast. He won't hear me being all silly and embarrassing right now, right?
I'm gonna let him know he has to check it out before you guys meet.
No. Come say hi. I don't know when I will ever be in that area again. So if you live within a couple hours, I would and want to, you know, come meet us and get your book signed, I encourage you to take the opportunity to come out and meet me. I'm very friendly. I don't bite.
But you might grab.
I might hug you behind really aggressively thinking that you're Kendall Kendrick. Kendall, by the way, thought that story was hysterically funny.
Awesome. Well, Thanks, everyone, for tuning in to our regular show. We've got another topic that we're thinking we have a good guest for, but we haven't even asked that person yet. So you may or may not have us normal again next week, or it might be an interview show. We'll see. Eventually, Sarah and I will get bored of each other and start inviting people back again. But in the meantime, we're good. So talk to you next week.
Have a good night. Thank you for listening to The Paleo View. If you enjoyed the show, please take a moment to rate us on iTunes. You can also support us by shopping for our favorite paleo products on the sidebars of our individual websites or by donating through PayPal.
All right. This will be fun.